You're listening to the Building Heroes podcast, which stands for Building Healthy, Energy Efficient, and Resilient Occupants as an educational series. The Building Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. If you want to learn more about Better Bricks, you can find them online at betterbricks.com.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am really excited about today's podcast. I've been away for a while on sabbatical, and during that sabbatical, I was working quite a lot with friends and colleagues who are on this call today to work towards a really exciting international interdisciplinary research group network. So you're going to learn a lot more about that. Before we get to the podcast, I am going to quickly read you the bios of Liam, Marian, and Zoltan. So first off, Liam O'Brien, who will be joining us, PhD in professional engineer. He's a professor in civil and environmental engineering at Carleton University. He is the principal investigator of the Human Building Interaction Lab, which consists of a team of 15 researchers with diverse backgrounds in engineering, architecture, and design. And in the past decade, he has led over $8 million of projects. His team is developing occupant-centric design processes, standards, and controls for high-performance buildings. Zoltan Nagy is a full professor and chair of building services at TU Eindhoven and founder of the Intelligent Environments Laboratory. Previously, he was an assistant professor at UT Austin, and he brings a unique background in mechanical engineering and robotics to building science. His research interests span from individual occupant behavior to city-scale energy analysis, bridging scales from people to buildings to communities through interdisciplinary research. And we're also joined by Marianne Tushi today, who is an associate professor jointly appointed in civil and mechanical engineering at the University of Toronto, and she is also the director of the Building Energy and Indoor Environment Lab. Dr. Tushi's research focuses on reducing the environmental impact of buildings while improving the occupant experience, specifically in multifamily buildings. I thought that I would also quickly read a little blurb from our new paper, Human-Centric Buildings for a Changing Climate, Introducing a New International Energy Agency Research Network. As building energy and health targets increase, occupants' influence on and interactions with their buildings is becoming more significant. Behaviors such as daily routines, purchasing decisions, and responses to extreme events directly impact energy use and health-related conditions within buildings. This dynamic is further shaped by global shifts such as teleworking, co-working, and home sharing, which disrupt traditionally assumed occupancy patterns. Additionally, growing expectations for comfort and the integration of new technologies intensify the need to reassess how humans are considered in building design, maintenance, renovation, and operation, bringing a human-centric lens to traditionally building-focused approaches. Our new paper introduces a new research network that explores four key areas in the context of human-centric buildings in a changing climate: individual human-building interactions, community scale interactions, building design and redesign, and building operations. Our network includes over 210 researchers from approximately 30 countries in multiple disciplines, including engineering, architecture, computer science, psychology, urban planning, sociology, public health, economics, medicine, and more. The objective of this paper is to establish the importance and relevance of these topics and to summarize the planned outcomes of our joint IEA initiative between the Energy and Buildings and Communities Program and a Users Technology Collaboration Program task. This work aligns with and advances the goals of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, particularly SDG 3 on health, 7 energy, 11 sustainable cities, and 12 responsible consumption, by centering human agency in climate resilient building strategies.
I'm here today with my colleagues and friends from the International Energy Agency Network. We'll start with. We'll get into the details of the longer name here in a little bit, but I'm here with Marianne, Zoltan, and Liam, and very excited to talk a little bit more about our IEA Annex 95 Human-Centric Buildings for a Changing Climate Network. And it's a mouthful there, so we'll explain a little bit what all of this is, who we are, why we are doing the research that we're doing, and give everyone a little insight into the work we're doing. But before we do that, I was thinking we could do some quick introductions. So maybe we'll just pop around the screen here, and if you don't mind sharing your name and where you're joining us from in your current role. That would be, I think, good to start with. So, Marianne, we'll start with you.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Marianne Tucci. I'm an associate professor at the University of Toronto.
Thank you. Zoltan?
I'm Zoltan. I'm a professor at build for Building Services at the Technical University of Eindhoven.
And Liam?
I'm a professor in building engineering at Carleton University, which is in Ottawa, Canada.
Thank you. And then just in case it's been a while since I've been on here. So, Julia Day, and I'm an associate professor at Washington State University in construction management with a background in design. So, we'll talk a little bit more about our research, and I think that'll become clear as we move on how we all got involved in this network. So, we'll just go around again if you want to share a little bit about your research background and maybe a fun, exciting project that you're working on right now. Marianne?
What do I have to start first? Okay. So a lot of my work focuses on building performance, specifically multi-unit residential buildings. I think they're super interesting as a sector, and all of the complications of high-rise buildings with the wildcard occupants in them makes them a lot of fun to study. So we're doing a lot of work right now trying to understand how climate change impacts these buildings and more specifically the people in them, how they cope with extreme heat and wildfire events, things like that. They're complicated buildings to operate just by their nature. And then when you kind of layer in all of these sort of new effects of climate change, it makes that problem even more complicated.
Awesome. You're in the right place for sure. Yeah, Zoltan, if you don't mind sharing a
Yeah,
little
thank
bit about.
you. Yeah, my work is about trying to unlock energy flexibility in the built environment, trying to make sure that we have enough energy at all times as we transition to renewable energy supply and as we have electrified homes. And so a lot of my work has been on developing software tools to understand how much flexibility is in the buildings, in residential buildings. And it turns out a lot of it is in the way people use the buildings and how we live in buildings. And so trying to understand that deeper is what I'm trying to do.
Awesome, thank you. And Liam.
Yeah, all my work pretty much revolves around people and sustainability and buildings. I'm particularly keen right now on a couple projects related to sufficiency, which is sort of challenging how much we actually need, whether it be floor area or, I don't know, food or energy. So I have a couple of students looking at the existing building stock through a sufficiency lens, and we're looking at climate change targets and sort of the relationship between home size and carbon intensity per unit of floor area, like square feet or square meter. So it's basically going to come down to you can either have a tiny house at current levels of energy efficiency, or a large house, but it's got to be really energy efficient. But the numbers are daunting. If you're allowed something like 6 square meters of housing, or 60 square feet, in some jurisdictions where they have a dirty grid and so on. So it's a good framework to look at it.
Yeah, definitely. And all of the examples you all just gave are really great examples of the types of messy or wicked problems I think we're trying to address in our research. And I actually, this is fresh on my mind because we just finished this in one of my classes, looking at what's called wicked problems, which are not easily solvable. And it's more than complex. It's, you know, when you're talking about having a tinier home at current levels, you know, there's just so many other variables that come into play that, you know, if you're trying to do a very scientific study, sometimes it's messy to get all those variables involved, but there's a lot of different things we have to think about. That's part of the reason we are trying to understand different methods in different disciplines and where others in, you know, diverse backgrounds and other countries, I think we have to look at all of these problems in really different ways because it's more than complicated. So that's really what's exciting me about some of the things that we're starting to look at and do. And then my research is also just focused on occupants, trying to understand what people do in buildings and why in particular, and then trying to understand certain actions, whether that's energy or health-based and implications it might have, or maybe one of the barriers is they don't understand how something works. And so there's an education component to that. So a little bit of design, a little bit of social science, trying to understand these really complicated things. So with that, sort of setting us up to look at this interdisciplinary piece, and we all have, you know, sort of different backgrounds and current areas that we're focusing on. I'm curious how each of you, and you can, we don't have to go round robin if you don't want, you can just jump in. I don't want it to feel too fancy here, but I'm curious how you each got involved in the International Energy Agency, so IEA, how you got involved in that whole world. So feel free to just pop in.
I can start. I think I was involved before the rest of you, but you know, feel free to prove me wrong. I started in a project called, well, it was about net zero energy buildings back in 2009. And my supervisor during my PhD actually hosted the first meeting of that. So I got to see the conception and stuff. And I just loved it as a student. I mean, because I got amazing free travel interaction with, you know, leading researchers. It was also eye-opening in, you know, in both directions for good and bad, like how long it takes to do projects when you're using different vocabulary, you have different perspectives, you have different like research incentives. Like some people don't care about papers. They're all about the, I don't know, demonstration projects and stuff like that. So that was pretty eye-opening. And then as soon as that finished, I realized I was going to pivot away from that topic a bit. And someone forming a new project invited me to be a, let's say, middle manager, subtask leader. And then from there, I just strung along. And after that was done, I started a new one with a colleague. And here we are today on the on my fourth project. So that's me.
Awesome. Who's next?
I'll jump in because historically, I think I joined after. I think it was NX66, the third one that Liam was involved with. And I was not involved in the NX, but at the tail end, I remember the NX organized a special issue in one of the journals to collect some of the outcomes. And I had done similar work, occupant-centric lighting control, and I thought it would fit. And so I wrote, and it turned out that they tried to close the submission to only people from the annex. But I asked them, well, how that can be, because how does that make sense to not want topics from that field in that special issue? So they said, all right, bring it on. So that was my first touch point. And I think after that, Liam called me and asked if I wanted to be doing a subtask lead in the fourth annex or third annex that he was organizing. So, and then from there on, I think I will echo what Liam said. It's a great opportunity for people to meet a lot of people from different fields that are driven by the same mission. So I loved it ever since. Yeah.
Yeah, And I'd say for me, it was definitely Liam who got me involved as well. I remember you invited me to the planning meeting for Annex 79. I had no idea what an annex was. I had a blast. It was really fun planning this 5-year arc. Still had no idea what it was all about. Fortunately, I went on mat leave. So I missed the kind of beginning of it. So I wasn't nearly as active in Annex 79 as I wanted to be by the time I came back. Things were already rolling. I tried to insert myself in as many of the activities as I could. And I so enjoyed the ones that I was able to contribute to. I love the teamwork. I love the international perspectives, and making new friends all over the world was just so much fun. So yeah, when the opportunity came to be involved in this one, I just thought, yeah, it's really great, especially to work with all of you on this. So thanks to Liam for introducing me to the first place.
Yeah, you're the common thread there, Liam. That I met Liam when I went to one of the meetings for Annex 66 initially, so defining occupant behavior. I had just published a paper from my PhD work, and at the time, that operating agent reached out to me and asked if I could come to one of the meetings. And I also had no idea what an annex was. And what I understand now is it's this international interdisciplinary research group that has this fancy annex name, and the different topics have different numbers. So I'll just put that in there before we go any further. But I went there and met some amazing people, including Liam, and continued to attend those meetings, and then was a subtask leader for Annex 79. And then I remember we were all in Germany at some point a few years ago talking about what's next. And then we had the idea for this annex. So Liam, do you want to talk a little bit about our current research network and 95 and what we're doing?
For sure. So I would say in general, this is the third project focused on people. The first two were all about the occupant. For this third one, although occupants are still a central role, we also recognize there's other important people like building operators and all sorts of other stakeholders. So to some extent, it's a continuation of past work, but there's some new themes like resilience, equity. So we're all about incorporating perspectives and people and researchers and stakeholders from the Global South. We're also looking at sufficiency, which I discussed before. And, you know, maybe I could pass it on to someone else to elaborate on that.
I think the only thing I will add, Liam, is that the one thing that is key for me, or that I think is important, like you said, there's many people involved, including design. But what has changed quite significantly over the past 10, 15 years is that we need to design for climate change and not avoid it anymore. And so that shift has to happen at every stage where people are involved in the design process and the operation phase. And that focus, I think, is key in this particular annex.
Hence the title, yeah, which I should have mentioned. So thank you, Zoltan, for adding that key detail.
Yeah, so I would also add, I know when we were discussing this initially, because it's the IEA, a lot of the past annex groups have specifically focused on energy topics. And I know we worked to include things like health, equity, and sufficiency, which you already mentioned. But in the nature of those really complex issues we're facing and trying to solve, you know, sometimes there are energy moves that we might make that might have health consequences and vice versa. So we're trying to find a balance and understand what those difficult issues are so that we can help, you know, come up with a solution to those. And there might be different types of solutions for different types of places, people, and so on. So trying to really get an understanding of those complicated things that we're dealing with in terms of human-centered design work in buildings.
I think so, to build on, if I can just add one more point, I think to build on, Julia, what you're saying, what I find very different about this annex too is a really deliberate attempt to bring in a very interdisciplinary group, so much so that it's actually under the guise of two groups within the IEA, one that's kind of engineering focused and one that's more social science focused. So that it's a much more deliberate attempt, I think, to bring these various perspectives together. But that's something we're definitely, you know, we're still fairly early on in this 5-year network. And I think that's something that we're still looking to round out to make sure we have good representation from a lot of those other disciplines outside of engineering and architecture.
Yeah, definitely. So to add on to that, we're still open for people who are excited about this and want to get involved from many different disciplines. Just the main emphasis here is the human-centric buildings for a changing climate. And there are so many different issues, whether that's energy or health and so on, that fall under that umbrella. And we're a huge network, which is why there's four of us, which the four of us are the operating agents. And then there's different subtasks, which we'll talk about here in just a little bit, which each have two subtask leaders. And then we have committees as well. So between the structure, we're able to start putting these different projects and research collaborators and groups together in a way to kind of tackle these really difficult problems. So the overarching objective of the network, I'll just kind of jump into that maybe and then say some of our research questions, and then maybe we can talk about the subtask and the themes and some examples of the activities. But our overall objective is, just to phrase this in a different way than what we've already talked about, is to determine the role that occupants and other building stakeholders must play to facilitate the energy transition while also adapting to our changing climate. And again, we're looking to develop, demonstrate, and deploy approaches to improve occupants' comfort and health in buildings using principles of sufficiency and equity. So that's sort of our overall objective that I think we've worked our way to through our conversation. But then we have specific research questions that we're also trying to tackle. So how do occupant interactions with their buildings change under extreme and unprecedented conditions that are driven by climate change, and why? So the last two annexes, 66 and 79 in particular, we're trying to really understand occupant behavior in buildings. But what happens if there's a power outage or a hurricane or, you know, extreme heat or cold, things like that? Obviously, people's behaviors will change. We need to understand how that happens, and maybe, for instance, different types of interfaces or controls that would be available in those kinds of scary conditions. We want to understand how different behaviors help or hinder people's ability to survive and thrive. How will extreme events specifically impact building function? So indoor conditions, comfort, and health. How do our expectations of building performance, whether that's comfort or energy performance, how do those need to shift due to our changing climate during the energy transition? And then the last kind of overarching research question, and again, there are many, many research questions, but these are just the initial ones to frame the overall network. How should we design and retrofit our buildings to best address human and environmental needs, again, in this changing climate? So that sort of sets up a research network. So we've had to narrow it down. One of the ways we've done that is to break some of these topics into four different subtasks. So Marianne, do you want to talk a little bit about the different four tasks?
Yeah, for sure.
Subtasks.
So just to get the organization straight to Julia, you mentioned, you know, there's operating agents and there's these subtask leaders, which I'll talk about in a second. Now, the questions that Julia just mentioned are kind of what are guiding all of us as researchers within the network. Within each subtask, there's a number of what we call research activities that are usually a group of people from all over the world, which are working together on a common project. And each of those will have very specific research questions that people are trying to address, but they kind of feed into this broader, the broader questions that Julia mentioned before. But to keep everything organized, we've got these four subtasks, which the activities report into. And so we've organized the subtasks both temporally and spatially. So in terms of scale, subtask one is really focused all on the individual. So looking at the behavior of operators, occupants, their well-being, their comfort, their health, in the context of buildings in this changing environment and in the energy transition. Subtask two kind of zooms out a little bit. So rather than just looking at the individual person, we're looking at the community as a whole, looking at principles of equity and sufficiency. And when we kind of zoom out, what are the implications of some of these broader societal shifts when it comes to meeting our goals? And then on the temporal side, we also want to give some thought to the building life cycle. So there are different decisions that you make at the design, at maybe retrofit, refurbishment. And so subtasks three and four kind of address that. Subtask three is really focused on design and redesign. We acknowledge that, you know, only the vast majority of our buildings that are going to exist in 2050 already exist today. So there really needs to be a focus on how we retrofit our existing buildings to cope with climate change and the energy transition. But we also want to be making the right decisions when you're building a brand new building. So subtask three is really focused on those two pieces. And then subtask four focuses on the operational side. So how do we improve how we operate our buildings to protect occupants against some of these extreme events. And then the idea here is that we kind of have this intersecting structure. So we have the spatial and temporal kind of overlapping. And what this provides is kind of a unique perspective. Each activity kind of needs to contemplate where they are. Are they working more on the individual or community scale? And are they working more at the design, redesign, or operational scale? So each of the activities resides in two subtasks, which I think we organize so that there's a little more cross-pollination between activities. And then separate from the subtasks, we also have two very important committees, one related to knowledge mobilization and one related to representation. So the Knowledge Mobilization Committee is really meant to serve the network in terms of creating pathways for our research outputs to get out to end users. So the general public, to policymakers, politicians. And so they're really helping come up with kind of standard pathways that we can all follow as researchers to accessing these stakeholders that can use hopefully all of the interesting work that we've developed through the network. And then the representation committee, I think it was already touched on before. One of the things that's a little different about this annex is we really want to focus on global representation and good representation from the global south as well as the global north. And so the representation committee is really focused on doing that and trying to recruit sort of more balanced viewpoints from a disciplinary perspective, from a geographic perspective, so that we can look at all of these wicked problems as holistically as we can.
That was an amazing overview of our overall subtask structure and our committees. When you said Global South, are we allowed to mention where our next meeting is yet?
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
So one of the things that we've also sort of touched on, but haven't talked about too much, is the travel that's involved with being in these research networks. So we meet every 6 months or so. And one of the things that we've done in our group is to meet in person once a year and then virtually once a year to try to, you know, reduce travel, increase participation, and cut down on emissions involved with 200 people traveling all over the world. So our next meeting is actually in the Global South in Buenos Aires. So very excited about that. And during those meetings, we get together and we talk about a lot of these different activities holistically. We get reports from the different subtasks and the committees. And then we have a lot of really focused time to work on those research activities and then go to next steps. So Zoltan, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the activities that we're currently doing in the network and maybe a few examples of what you're excited about?
Yeah. I'm excited about all the activities. We have almost like 50 plus activities that people have started and are starting to gain momentum. One thing that Marianne alluded to also is that we actively very actively trying to avoid silofication. So the subtask organization is deliberately meant to be in a way that people don't stick in one room for the whole meeting and never see the other people in the other room. And that's kind of like lessons that we've learned, as you've seen, a lot of us were involved in this many times. So that is a risk that's happening, that we siloify. And so we actively avoided it. So a lot of our meetings, a lot of the setup structure is set up in a way that hopefully it gets more people to talk from different disciplines. And that being said, so some of these activities, and I'm biased a little bit because I'm interested in certain things, but that doesn't mean these are the best activities, of course. But one activity I like, just because it seems so basic, but the thing is subtask one, and I'm not involved in it, but just think about the building interface, how you use things in your home, like whether it's lamps, whether it's thermostats, whether it's windows, whether it's heating, cooling devices. None of it is standardized, and we don't know what works really, and we don't know what doesn't work. We just see the impact of it. And so trying to understand the concepts and trying to standardize it in a way that it's useful, in a way that the buildings will be actually used the way they are designed, seems such a basic thing, but it turns out it's not. And so this activity is trying to understand that, what works in terms of building interface designs and what doesn't work. Because there's a lot more examples of that, it turns out. So that's one activity. And then the other activity, because a lot of my research is in this interface of operation and buildings, as part of the interface, once it works and once people do something, you know, can we actually nudge people to do what, I don't want to say what we want them to do, but let's say what they actually want to do, they just don't know that they should do it. Let's say somebody has an interest in saving energy, very basic thing, right? We all want to do that, but what should we do? And when should we do that? So how do you set up a system that is not, you know, monitoring you, but providing suggestions in a way that doesn't impact your daily life significantly, but at the same time provides benefits for you, and then with that for the globe. And I think that those are simple questions, and those are the best ones usually that should be answered. And very often they lead to more questions. And so that's, I think, the interesting activities that we have. Those are two that are my favorites, but maybe you guys want to join in and jump into other ones.
Yeah, I'm curious if others have favorite activities that they're involved in as well. I just was going to say, I remember our last meeting of 79, where we were trying to recap what we had done, and we ended up with more questions than we had answers, it felt like. So it seems like these are continually doing that, and our research questions just keep growing and growing. Marianne or Liam, do you have any other activities that you're particularly excited about?
I mean, one was the behavioral nudging one that Zoltan mentioned, which I'm really excited about. Another one that's just top of mind, not that it's just one that we're leading, which is kind of different from the ones that Zoltan mentioned. One of the questions that we had was, as a design community, how do we actually learn from our buildings post-occupancy? Often people design things and they send them out into the world, and then we really never close that loop. And when you talk to occupants and operators, there's a lot of things that don't end up working as planned. And so how do we make sure that information gets back to the design community? So we've got a pretty big group that's working on a global survey right now of design practitioners to try to understand how they learn from their existing projects. But then ultimately what we're going to try to do is develop a framework for how we can promote that within professional practice around the world. Because we have a lot of this information. It's just getting it back to the stakeholders that can make those decisions. So.
I haven't been involved in that one because I was involved in other ones that were happening simultaneously. And now I'm really interested in that one.
Okay, we can chat.
That's part of the danger of this, is there's lots of different activities and research projects. And then it's a balance to find the right ones and then to not overdo it because it's exciting.
Every time I come away from a meeting, I'm like, oh my gosh, I signed up for 5 more.
I know, exactly. That's how I'm feeling right now. Liam, do you have any, I know you're leading one right now and involved in many, any want to chat about?
Sure, I can talk about the one I'm leading. We're trying
Okay.
to establish whether there can be universal symbols on interfaces like adjustment buttons for thermostats or light switches or whatever that can be universally understood, kind of the way we have universal symbols for things like toxic, you know, nuclear, radiation, etc. So it's let's say a little bit more of a blue sky type activity. But I think it'll be interesting. And we're still in the planning stages, but that's okay.
Yeah. Some of these have timelines of their own. And I think that's a symptom of a lot of us are involved in a lot of things and excited. So yeah, that's why we have 5 whole years. I'm involved in several and just about to start a new one that's also about interfaces, but I'm really interested when we're looking at resilience and, you know, changing conditions under different kind of extreme events. I'm really interested in how different building interfaces work or don't work in those conditions. So I wrote a chapter about this a while ago, and I just want to build on that idea. And I'm excited about having a larger group from different backgrounds and other countries with different types of interfaces get involved. But one example we had here in the US is during Hurricane Katrina, people were having to throw chairs through their windows to get fresh air because they weren't operable windows that just opened like a typical window. And so for me, that's a design issue that's maybe a lower hanging fruit common sense thing that, okay, if we can predict that unpredictable things will happen, then how can we design for those so that if something goes wrong, you know that the people in the building are still safe. So I promise that one's going to start soon. with that, I'm curious, just as we move forward, we were just approved to be what's called in the working phase. We have a few more years to work on these research projects and activities. And then in our fifth year or final year, I guess, which is our fourth year, we wrap up with reporting and things like that. But so there's still time to get involved if people are interested. I'm curious, though, from each of you, like, what's been your favorite thing about being involved in the network or this sort of whole world of IEA annexes?
Hey, having new friends all over the world, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's a pretty incredible way to build an international network of folks, and everyone's just so lovely and excited to be there. I think that Julia, you touched on this with your previous comment, but I think one of the really interesting things about this is you really expand your perspective on the research that you've always, you're doing research in your particular jurisdiction and within this context that you're very aware of. And one of my favorite things about the annex, aside from having all of these wonderful friends, is that you really expand that perspective and you can learn from what have other people been doing in other countries this whole time that we can maybe together, we can kind of all build on what we've done and advance things at a global perspective rather than just incrementally from where we are from our perspective.
Yeah. Same with me with the friends. I love having new friends from all over the world, and getting to travel to different parts of the world to work with everyone has just been like, I'm so grateful for that. It's been amazing. Liam and Zoltan, what's your favorite?
I think on top of that, right, also that, and very often in your universities, you're the few people that work on similar topics, and it's very hard to be like with like-minded people in the same room that want to do exactly the same thing. And that's kind of like the platform here. On top of it being awesome people, it's also kind of like the same type of work that will happen on a larger scale. And that's a nice platform for what the annex provides, basically.
Yeah.
That's why it works. Otherwise it would not work, I think. That's the main, yeah, because yeah, you can do your research in your lab, but once you get all the people into the same room that talk and think the same way, nice things happens.
Yeah,
I agree with all that, and I think the network is so cohesive and so at the front of the field that if In my view, if you're sort of outside of it, it's really hard to keep on top of all the research. So it's a really good way to like bring minds together and like advance things. And I'll just note on a personal note, like I've made so many friends, and last year, as you guys know, I biked across Europe, and it was kind of neat that like probably 2 or 3 days didn't go by that I didn't see someone that I knew from the network as I made my way from the north to the south. And I wouldn't have had that network without it. So.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, the connections. And I think it's really needed too, because if we're all, again, just working in our own silos, trying to do something, but somebody else has done it, but maybe in a different way, like it's the perfect way to come together and, you know, explore new things and in some ways speak the same language, but because we're from disciplines, different disciplines, we're coming at things from a different perspective and maybe saying things differently too. So there are moments where, you know, there's really lively conversations because everyone's coming at things from a different perspective, but that's what makes it kind of exciting too. It would be boring if it was all the same. So I think that's a pretty good explanation of the network, and people who were confused about what an annex is, I hope they get it now. I wish I had had something like this when I first started to explain all of the things. So we actually just published this week a paper that introduces the Human-Centric Buildings for a Changing Climate Network, or HCB network. And it tells readers a lot more about, you know, what we just talked about with more examples and specifics about the subtask. So I can be sure in the companion document to this podcast to include the link to that. I think that's probably a pretty good place to leave. Anybody have any parting thoughts or ideas?
I just had one quick one. To note, and I think Liam probably said this at some point along the way, you only get out of the network what you put into it. And so I think you can be kind of a passive observer, but you're just not going to get nearly as much out of the experience compared to engaging in multiple activities and attending the meetings and all of that sort of thing. So it's a really neat opportunity. And I just want to, encourage people to join, sign up for the mailing list so you can get all of our updates, as Julia mentioned. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for your time. And it's always fun to talk to you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, that was very exciting. Well, thank you again. And we'll chat next week.